Hi, everyone. Michael Abernathy at the Times News here with Isaac Groves.
Hello, everybody.
He's our intrepid court reporter, and he's been covering off and on, because the trial itself has been off and on, this attempted murder trial involving Christopher Lee Neal and his girlfriend, whose name I can't remember right now.
LaTanya Wetzel.
Yes, okay. In this 2017 attempted murder case where they chased this DSS worker's car, right, and shot it.
Yeah, this is the story that's come out in testimony, and LaTanya Wetzel did testify. She's actually pleaded guilty to everything but attempted murder. That was the arrangement she got with prosecutors, and she would plead guilty to assault with a deadly weapon and firing a gun into an occupied vehicle, but not be charged with attempted murder. And she testified against her former boyfriend and father of three of her children. So on June 13th of 2017, the DSS worker, her name is Glover, she was assigned to check on their youngest daughter, who was a premature baby who was only about a week old, whose umbilical cord blood tested positive for marijuana, which I didn't know was a routine thing to test for, but there you have it. This started, they needed to do a wellness check on the family's other children, and this was not a big deal. The baby was in good health, but, you know, drugs were detected, so you need to take a peek. Thing is, Wetzel has a history with DSS. She'd had three children taken from her home in 2013 or 14. And there are circumstances where it really didn't seem like it was particularly necessary, but she didn't end up cooperating with DSS as far as when they went to do a wellness check because her son was sick and she hadn't approved a Medicaid card until the last minute, by which time there was already a case. They went there and there were dogs in the house and dog feces all over the place. And they said the conditions weren't good and that she needed to clean up and do a couple of other things. And she just didn't engage with DSS. I mean, she apparently did go to some of these meetings. Some, I don't know if she went to any of her hearings, though, but ultimately they ended up adopting her kids out. So she wasn't apparently well-disposed to DSS to begin with.
Yeah.
She's particularly not well-disposed to DSS by June 2017. And so it's a week after she's had a C-section and preeclampsia, and she's on Percocets, and she gets a call from DSS saying, because Glover goes to look for the house to do this wellness check.
Right.
She gets to the house that the address they have, and it's Christopher Neal's father. No mom, no kids, and he doesn't give them an address. He kind of gives them it's a trailer over there. It's got some green on it.
Yeah.
They go looking for that. They're calling the cell number that they have for her. They get her. She says, they both testify. She says, take this phone before I cuss them out, and hands it to Christopher Lee Neal, who apparently goes outside of their trailer, not entirely knowing what's going on, but according to the social workers, used some pretty harsh language, and then say he was going to go to their supervisor. Then they're headed towards their office, because this is up in Reidsville, and the office is outside of Reidsville. They built their county complex outside of town, I guess to save money, but either way, they start seeing this blue BMW SUV coming after them, and there's a man holding something. They don't know what it is. He later testified, or he testified yesterday, that he was trying to get a picture of them, which is apparently something he does. He chases people and takes pictures with his phone. But
there's a history of that.
You see, well, this is where we get complicated. He chases them, according to their testimony, and they end up, like, they're hitting a speed of 90 miles an hour. He's like trying to pass some people in left turn lanes, follows them through a parking lot, the Bojangles, and then they go to an elementary school, and they're on the phone with 911, and they're waiting for, you know, deputies to show up to help them out. And then he goes and talks to the people at DSS and has a meeting with them, with their supervisor, as he said, during which, according to the supervisor, a woman named Melissa Kaneko, he says that his girlfriend has taken out papers on him for domestic violence. And he says, and she said that I hit her in the head with a pistol. She said I chased her in the car and waved a gun when the kids were in the car. But I beat all that in court. And she did actually withdraw her charges and withdrew her domestic violence protection order the same day she took it out, which was that February 2017. But nevertheless, DSS felt that they were obligated to check to make sure there was not danger in the home. which of course they couldn't do because they still didn't know where they were living. He left there, he says, believing that they were going to have an appointment the next morning because he was just too busy to deal with it that day. DSS does not say that. DSS says, no, we're not going to make sure that we were not going to let, you know, wait till tomorrow morning to see if you're going to shoot anybody. We were going to go and confirm whether or not there was anything going on. They got.
So this is an unrelated separate check that's going to happen the same day.
Well, it now becomes all one. It's gone from just a routine wellness check to a domestic violence check. I don't know I can't remember the terminology off the top of my head, but basically, instead of just making sure there's food in the refrigerator and mom's not on heroin, it's make sure that dad's not going to kill somebody.
Okay.
And so they finally get her to tell them where they're staying. Basically, they say, look, if you don't tell us where you're staying, we're going to have a court hearing like tomorrow, and you're going to be compelled to do so. And so she gives them the address. It's about 4:15 in the afternoon. Now, Glover and this other woman, Emily Pulliam, who was with her, kind of wasn't supposed to be with her to begin with, but they were checking on babies at the same hospital, ended up kind of stuck together that day working on this. But they weren't going to go without an escort. Now, we run into this periodically here at the Times News. They were having a shift change, so they could not get any deputies to go with them until after 6 o'clock, or until they didn't get to the house with the deputies until 6 o'clock. And they get there, and Wetzel's not entirely cooperative. She wants to see a warrant, stuff like that. Of course, they're not here to search the house. It's a DSS check.
Yeah.
So I've seen body camera footage. She does end up sitting down with Glover and saying, yes, the statements I made were true, but it wasn't him that hit me with the pistol. I don't know who did that. And it was a misunderstanding. He wasn't chasing me with a gun. It was a phone. But that was enough confirmation for DSS to say, the kids can't stay here tonight. We need to actually dig into this a little bit more. Where can they go? And Wetzel resisted that. And to the point where it was, the way the DSS supervisor put it, it was just, they had already gone to a judge and said, we need to take non-secure custody of these children. At that point, DSS was legally the guardians of the children. So when Wetzel said, okay, we can take them to my mom's in Fayetteville, at that point, they couldn't do that unless they went and did a home check on her mother's house in Fayetteville, which means they're going to have to get another county's DSS to go do that. And
so they're not doing that.
They were not going to do that night. They were going to take the kids and take them into foster care, which is what they did. And of course, in the course of all this, Neil is called. He comes in. He's furious. He's shouting. Kids are crying. And as things are going on, Glover is, terrified of him at this point because he's chased her and she knows that he's had this kind of a confrontational conversation with her supervisor and one of her coworkers. And he comes in and he's all worked up. And on the way out, when they're putting the kids in the car, Glover says, I hope that when we talk about this tomorrow that you can be a little more calm. And as someone said, no, never in the history of calm down has anyone ever calmed down when you told him to calm down.
Yeah.
And he didn't. He got really angry and said something about, I would die for my kids. I may die tonight. You may die tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think probably made an impression on the jury. They could see him saying that. That night, Glover takes the kids to Greensboro to a foster facility, and then is back in Reidsville at 10:30. When Neil and Wetzel show up there, saying they want to see a supervisor, and of course there's a deputy with the social worker saying, "Well, there's no supervisors here. It's well after hours. You're going to have to do this tomorrow. Yeah. Get a lawyer." And they escort Glover to the county line because she lives in Burlington. So they escort her to the Caswell County line, and she's driving down 87. She's heading into Burlington. She's on Webb Avenue, and right around the Glen Raven Pharmacy, she thinks that someone's following her. She pulls off. She pulls off in a parking lot. The vehicle keeps going. She gets back on the road. The vehicle comes back. She pulls into another parking lot, and then two bullets come flying through her windows and miss her by inches.
Yeah.
And then she takes off. She thinks she's been shot. I mean, I saw her on the stand. It was like she was reliving the moment. It just, it messed her up. She is no longer a social worker. She's, she's in therapy. She's, it definitely just terrified her. But she wasn't hit, and she got through it. But she immediately knew who it was, mm-hmm. You know, or she said she knew. You know, she immediately said it was Christopher Neal. Well, of course, Wetzel is the one that says, "I'm the one that shot at her," but Neal was driving. Neal says, "No, I was over at my aunt's house, who has dementia, helping out with her, and Wetzel borrowed the car and never came back, and she did it all by herself." There's evidence that doesn't really support that.
Yeah.
There's a thing he used his debit card at a car wash in Greensboro at what, after 12:30 or so that morning, the following morning. So he wasn't in Reidsville at that time, or it seems unlikely he was in Reidsville at that time. And he also had alibi witnesses in there this morning who were his young cousins.
How young?
Oh, I think they were, one of them was graduating from high school that June, because that's where he was arrested. They were arrested in South Carolina around Myrtle Beach, because he was down there to have a cookout party for his cousin who just got out of high school, which he contends was something they'd planned for a long time. He wasn't on the run, anything like that.
Right.
But there's some debate about that. The cousin says they had sort of planned things ahead. And then his other cousin, who lives with the aunt who he said he was with that night, was not able to fully confirm everything he was saying. He was there. He was in and out that night. But, you know, no, he wasn't there at 10:30 because he was at DSS. And there's a picture of him at Sheets getting gas. And he wasn't there at this other time because, you know, and she went to bed at 10 o'clock. So she doesn't know where he was after that.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have a rock hard alibi there. He did finish up his... He closed his case today. And
we should mention, because we haven't yet, he's representing himself.
Yeah, that is, I guess that I really did bury the lead on that one, didn't I? Yes. I've never actually seen somebody represent themselves.
It's fun, isn't it? I'm sorry to make a jovial joke of this, but...
In a cringy way.
I mean, it's difficult to watch, but in a cringy way.
Yeah.
And but it's also very... interesting.
Yeah, you kind of appreciate a little bit more what lawyers are doing when you see somebody who's, I mean, he's not terrible, but there's a lot of things he does not understand about the law. And he spent 20 years in federal prison and claims that he had to learn how to be his own lawyer to get out. He did get out of prison. I think his sentence was reduced. I don't know how much his skills had to do with that, but it did happen.
What was he in federal prison for?
Drug trafficking.
Okay. I think
there are a number of relatives involved. It was back in 1995. He says there was absolutely no drugs recovered, but they put him in prison anyway. I think I might have read part of that federal indictment a while back, but I don't remember the details.
Okay.
But
anyway.
Yeah, there was definitely a quantity of crack cocaine involved and at least three firearms. So when you get into federal court with that kind of thing, you're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And he was. Because I think he hadn't been out of prison that long when he met Wetzel back in 2013, which is a long time to be away. Yeah. But and then yesterday he testified on his own behalf and, you know, as his own attorney, which I think... None of the people I talked to in the room, the detective who I've seen in court many, many times, and a defense attorney who's been around for a little while, they'd never seen any of this.
Yeah.
Have you?
No, I never watched a defendant examine himself on the stand.
Right.
So.
Well, and it was, have you ever seen Bananas, the Woody Allen movie?
I haven't seen that either.
Well, there's a scene where he represents himself and questions himself by jumping out of the stand. Right. It wasn't like that.
Yeah.
Neal sat down and he had a written statement that he read from that was pretty similar to, he covered a lot of the events that had already been testified to, but he just sounded a whole lot better in his version. He wasn't shouting. He wasn't swearing. Other people were being, he said that he thought that the call that he'd gotten from the DSS workers that Wetzel, you know, when Wetzel handed him the phone, he thought it was a prank call because they were saying, "We're going to take your kids away," and laughing and stuff like that, which, I don't know Miss Glover. I've seen her on the stand. I've seen her in court every day. She doesn't seem like the kind of person to laugh while she was talking about removing kids from the home. And my understanding is that she was actually a pretty good social worker and didn't take this sort of thing lightly. But
So the jury, what, you think they've gotten a sense of his credibility through all this?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been times when when he was under cross-examination, and I'm trying to remember specifically, Rick Champion is the prosecutor, and Champion was asking him about, what was it? It might have been when he was at the car wash in Greensboro, maybe. And at some point, Champion was saying, well, what about this? And he said, well, I haven't got anything to say about that. Well, no comment on that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that he's necessarily done himself a whole lot of good. And you know, there's been times when he was cross-examining his former girlfriend, where he was pretty ugly. Made comments about she gave up her kids for a puppy because her previous kids, she had moved out of her apartment because she had a dog she didn't want to get rid of.
So there's definitely bad blood there.
Oh boy, yeah, he's not. Yeah, he was not particularly sweet to her on the stand. It was interesting to watch. There were times when he was sort of engaging with her and seemed somewhat sympathetic, and then he would, you know, then accuse her of cheating on him and lying about him. And then yesterday, I think Rick Champion was questioning him about, what about, you know, when she goes hit in the head with a pistol? And he goes, well, I didn't do that. I never touched her. That was probably one of her other boyfriends. And so Champion was saying, so does that, you know, I was asking him about being jealous. He says, I'm not jealous. That's my girlfriend over there. I think he said, that's my chick right there. Mm-hmm. There's a woman who was in the courtroom who apparently he's been seeing or was seeing when he was out of jail. Who I don't think was particularly pleased to be pointed out that way at that moment. But he was obviously angry and defensive, but saying that there were too many women out there to get hung up on one, and he didn't really care who Wetzel was sleeping with when he had, you know, pretty obviously tried to rake her over the coals about it when he had her on the stand. And so, yeah, I don't think that the jury's, I don't see that anyone coming away from this being truly in love with him. Yeah. He does have a lot of family support. You know, his parents have been there. He's had various relatives in there. So he's got that going for him, and I suppose that does speak well of somebody. I think you're kind of, when you decided to represent yourself, you kind of testified against yourself a little bit right there.
Yeah.
Because it's just one of those things that is just not a good idea, and everybody knows it. I think that he's chosen to do that because he hasn't been able to have, he's gone through a lot of lawyers. I mean, he's gone through a lot of lawyers. I think probably because they all told him he needed to plead out.
Yeah.
There was just, you know, I mean, there's no photo of him doing what he's accused of, but there's a co-conspirator who's testifying against him and a fair amount of circumstantial evidence and his own behavior. He tends to get sort of conspiratorial when he's questioning and basically saying that people are coming after him for various things, so I don't know how the jury feels about that, obviously, but it will be interesting to see how long it takes them to come up with a verdict and what that verdict is.
Yeah, which should start pretty soon. You said closings are this afternoon.
Yeah, they had to. Yeah, they'll be going back at 2:30 this afternoon.
Okay, so it's about 15 till 2 right now Tuesday. So,
yeah,
I want to give a good shout out because we had a conversation about this about. Shout out to Judge Lambeth, who has had to referee.
Yes.
With a defendant, when a defendant represents himself, it is an infinitely more difficult job for a judge because they're trying to preserve the law and the way the court system works, and but also, you know, teach this person the law and not overstep their bounds. It's really difficult to do.
And every once in a while, Neil will say something like, well, Your Honor, you have to understand, and he will say some statute, and Lambeth will say, do not tell me the law. And he has said to him, I've given you a lot of leeway because you're representing yourself, when he was, you know, badgering a witness. And he was badgering a witness. He was, you know, I think it would have been much easier on the alleged victim if, she's not an alleged victim. Somebody definitely took a shot at her. If she had been questioned just by a defense attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Neil was trying to bring up stuff. I think he had someone do a background check on her and her husband, and I think he had tracked where, you know, different addresses they'd had, that sort of thing. But then he started saying that she'd been convicted of writing bad checks in 2014, and when Champion and Lambeth looked at the background check that he brought, they said, but it doesn't say that. It doesn't say she was convicted of or even charged with writing bad checks. It doesn't, it just says that there was some thing. I had never got to see it, so yeah. I don't know what it said, but...
So yeah, for the record here, that's not on her record.
You know, she has not been convicted of writing bad checks.
Or even charged.
Right. The only thing that was actually on there that was basically legit was a traffic offense, you know, and like a minor one. And at some point, to impeach her credibility, he did say, it looks here like this photo of your car that you were driving that night, that it was out of inspection, you know. And that was his way of trying to impeach her credibility, was that, you know, her car had not been inspected. Which, I don't know, neither's mine, so.
Yeah, I got about 30 days.
I just realized that mine's like 2 months out of date. I need to get a set of tires like this week.
Oh, yeah. Isaac, don't say that on the air. Everybody, look the other way for a little bit.
Yeah.
If you see Groves coming down the road.
Yeah. Well,
okay. You know. Thank you, Isaac.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks for all your work in there. Thanks for the perspective on this pretty interesting trial.
Yeah, it is. It is. I've never seen anything quite like it. And, you know, this, of course, happened in 2017, which was kind of the tail end of all that nasty bout of gun violence we had in Burlington.
Yep.
I mean, I can't say if things have necessarily died down, but there was a stretch there.
Did you just knock on your head?
I did.
Yeah. So people who didn't see or hear that.
That's it. Something my mom taught me. Yeah. Yeah, there was a stretch there when it seemed like every day there was somebody shooting at somebody and sometimes getting them. And this kind of happened sort of at the tail end of that. So I think that they've tried to prosecute those pretty vigorously because it was a scary time in Burlington.
It was. All right. Well, everybody, you can figure out how the trial turns out in the Times News. Isaac will be writing about it.
Yeah, I expect I'll have a verdict on, what is, Thursday.
Okay.
I mean, I'll put like a dollar on that.
Oh. All right. Cool. Cokes from the vending machine. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening. And thanks again, Isaac.
You're welcome.